This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run with Philip C, who's just adjusting his mic, and I'm Wong Xiaoning. 7:36, Tuesday, the 30th of August. And as usual, in about 30 minutes, it's The Breakfast Grill, and it's a special Merdeka one where I sit down with Tan Sri Andrew Sheng. And if you're wondering, this name sounds very, very familiar. It should be, because he is, of course, a very well-known central banker. He even headed the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Exchange right up to 2005. He's a distinguished fellow of the Institute for Capital Market Research Malaysia. He's been on many boards, including Khazanah, and of course, a frequent commentator on all things related to economy, geopolitics, and you can find his articles in The Star and The Edge. And it's very timely to speak to a distinguished gentleman like him to find out, after 65 years of independence, where is our country heading to in terms of economy, direction, strategy, and are we strong enough and honest enough to have these tough conversations about ourselves?
His articles are pretty candid, if you go and if you read them, right? So a very interesting conversation to hear later how candid he will be.
Yes. So do tune in. That's going to be happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, we're going to turn our attention to the Employment Act, because the government has postponed the enforcement of it to January next year. This U-turn was announced less than a week from its earlier scheduled date of September 1st implementation.
Now, Human Resources Minister Dato' M. Saravanan said that this was to assist industry players who are still dealing with a shortage of foreign workers and recovering from the pandemic. When these amendments are finally implemented, key changes include a reduction of working hours from 48 to 45 hours a week, an increase for maternity leave from 60 to 98 days, and paternity leave from 3 to 7 days. Now, employees can work flexible hours and have the ability to choose location, time, and number of work days. So, originally approved by Parliament in March this year, why did the government flip-flop on this?
And how will the amended law also impact the labour market in Malaysia? For some answers, we speak to Dr. Niaz Azadullah, Southeast Asia Lead at the Global Labour Organization, who is also Professor of Economics at Monash University. Now, good morning, Dr. Niaz. Now, what were the main points of concern by employers over the proposed Amendment Employment Act?
Thank you, and good morning. One concern is the timing, since our labour market is yet to fully recover from the migrant worker shortage caused by the pandemic. The other concern is that we are talking about several big changes here. You have already commented on those: reduction of maximum weekly hours of work, introduction of flexible work arrangements, extension of maternity leave, approvals on hiring foreign workers, and also, you know, a wide range of employees now being entitled to overtime payments. All these put together will affect wage bills in sectors that in the past benefited from low pay, such as plantation and construction industries. And the response from the business community is that they're not ready yet.
But this is the frustration, isn't it? Because this was not a last-minute bill. This was agreed, you know, early this year. So, you know, there should have been time to do the preparations and get everything done right. So I guess the question in my mind is, what is the rationale for the minister to delay the implementation to January 1st then?
You're right. So on one hand, the minister is trying to be strategic, i.e., appearing to be accommodative of the industry demands for more time to resolve labor shortage. But if you think about it, he's also been cautious with major policy changes, given the country's volatile political environment. There are already calls for G15 to be held in November this year instead of next year. And it's not unusual for delays in implementation of critical reforms in election years.
So, like we say, right, it's only 4 months. Will this actually ensure that employers are going to be ready for a smooth and seamless implementation of the Act? Or do you see them coming up with the different excuses?
Well, you know, in theory, it can make a potential difference because there has been another development. This very month, the ban on employment of new Bangladeshi workers, which was lifted on paper last year in December has finally come into effect. So from this month, workers have started coming in, and this particular move is expected to help resolve the current crisis of foreign workers shortage in Malaysia.
And so, Nias, you know, let's assume that they will implement this by January 1st. But we also hear that there are a lot of opportunities, that it's not a perfect piece of legislation, right? So what are the things we should do to further fine-tune it, you know, once this is implemented? What's the next phase of refinement and optimization of this legislation then?
So at this stage, I will not ask for further refinements or, you know, or amendments. The introduction of the revised amended act is already a watershed moment for Malaysia. So instead, the focus really should be on compliance. If fully implemented, it would go a long way in improving our labor standards. But I think the major challenge is that the lack of full ownership by business community. So far, they have acted as passive and reluctant partners. Industry leaders need to own the changes and become the primary advocate for the reform, which is very critical for improving Malaysia's global image, where worker exploitation and forced labor is common. And I should also add that graduation to a high-wage, high-productivity Malaysia with the guarantee of decent work is really the spirit of Shared Vision Prosperity 2030. So I think a broad coalition is very much critical for effective implementation.
Okay, Dr. Nias, you brought up a very valid point in that why is there lack of ownership by businesses? How do we change that mindset so that employers see employees sometimes as partners rather than just cost?
Well, again, the government is doing its part. If you recall, earlier this year, we have ratified the ILO Convention on Forced Labor. We are also sitting on UN Committee on Human Rights. And I think we have major plan documents like the Malaysia Plan and Shared Vision Prosperity. So, so there is therefore this countrywide, aspiration for better treatment of workers. And we are already competing with other global, aspiring nations for, more productive workers. So I think more dialogue, more engagement is critical. Hopefully that will kind of open doors for a broader coalition formation.
But in the end also, besides the partnership, compliance is key. And it really sounds like we can't seem to get our labour legislation implemented well. Case in point being the minimum wage of that 1,500 level. We see talk that actually many corporates and companies are not implementing it. So what can the government do to ensure compliance and effective implementation of labour legislation then?
Yeah, that's a great question. The minimum, wage of ringgit 1,500 came into effect on May 1st, but we still hear stories that 2/3 of the companies surveyed said they were not ready to implement, and another survey found that 80% of the companies didn't want to pay higher wages. But you are right that it is also an issue of the state capacity of not doing enough, the responsible agencies not doing enough to sort of make sure that industries kind of respect the revised minimum wages law. Of course, there are issues on the side of the industry that, one shock after another is kind of making it very hard for them to fully recover from the pandemic. But again, I think at the same time, now it is time for government to also improve the reinforcement infrastructure.
Okay, let's shift the conversation to something that's going to be happening on October 7, which is Budget 2023. It's going to be tabled. So what kind of labour and human capital investments would you like to see being reflected in it?
I hope that the budget will create provisions for full educational recovery, particularly in B40 communities. I say this because the pandemic has caused big disruptions, not just to our education system, but also to the labor market. And we are yet to fully recover from this twin shock. Estimates of learning and earning losses in Malaysia caused by the pandemic is one of the highest in the world. And as for the labor market, budgetary provisions, I would like to see better support for school-to-work transition among young adults, particularly those leaving the education system for the first time, for paid employment in a very precarious labor market. They're not just facing uncertainty in terms of employment prospect, their training has also suffered because of the pandemic. So budget support for retraining them would be also helpful.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Dr. Niaz Asadullah, Southeast Asia Lead at the Global Labour Organization, who's also Professor of Economics at Monash University, Malaysia, telling us what his wish list is for Budget 2023. Yes, I certainly hope the government is really paying attention to education. After DOSUM released results that more than 70% of SPM takers don't want to continue their studies, that is indeed very, very worrying. Up next, we'll be speaking to Datuk Malik Imtiaz, constitutional lawyer, for a review on Malaysia's legislative framework. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.